back with Truth News Radio. Welcome to Hour 2 of the show. And in the second hour, we've got an interview today with a man with quite an extraordinary story to tell and an angle on some of the aspects of injustice and outright deception which seem to be at the core of the way our modern society works. We're talking here about problems with the actual structure of the law, of the parliament, of the Commonwealth. We're talking about things that I actually don't have a lot of knowledge about. They're not things I've researched deeply, but I know that there's been a lot of people on the internet talking about this. Scott Bartle is the creator of a YouTube documentary that you can all watch, and it's titled Frequently Unanswered Questions of the Australian Government, and it documents an extraordinary saga of trying to get a car imported into Australia and the incredible confusions of bureaucracy and an outright obstruction that Scott encountered while doing that. But now Scott has moved on with some, I guess, deeper investigations into the very structure of our government and society. And on that note, I'd like to welcome Scott to the show. Scott, are you there?
Hello, yes. How are you?
Look, I'm great. I'm sort of a bit new to your work. I hope my introduction there was suitable. If you'd like to clarify anything about that, just continue. I'll give you the floor.
Oh, thank you. No, it's been fascinating, this journey that I've gone through in seeking the substantiation or validation of actual government authority. And what we've found is basically they have none. And the origins of that is really quite a fascinating story, and it kind of traces back through banking of all places. So okay. We've kind of thought that banks are kind of subservient to government in as much as that's where they get their banking licenses from. But what it seems is that the banks are actually pulling the strings of our present governments at the moment.
Wow.
Now, the history on that is probably where I started was, you look at various points in history and there are times when governments actually printed money from their own treasury and spent it into the economy. Now, that money was not borrowed into existence. It was printed directly out of the treasury. And when you spend that money on roads and infrastructure and that sort of thing, the backing for that currency is the energy and effort that's expended by the people. So the arguments about, oh, you're going to get inflation if you just can print it out of thin air. Well, no, you're backing it by the amount of energy and effort that's expended with these roads and bridges and infrastructure. And if you say, well, you're going to get mad currency inflation, well, how many bridges can you build in 1 year?
Yeah.
There's a limit. There's a physical limit as to how many things you can build. Now, contrast that with borrowing money from a private bank. Now, what we gloss over is the fact that we've given a license to this private bank to print this money into existence. But contrast the difference of who owns the money in the circulation. When you print it from the treasury, the people own it because it's spent into the economy on public infrastructure, backed by the people's energy and effort. Now, if you spend it if it's come from the private banks, they own it. And because it's entered into the economy by a loan, it needs repayment. And guess who gets the job of repaying it? The people, via their government in the form of taxation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, interesting angle you've got on it there. My understanding of when they talk about printing money, and perhaps what you're talking about is a more idealized concept of what printing money should be. But in the current form of it, when they talk about printing money, they are actually borrowing from the bank. I mean, basically, when we print money, the banks are heavily involved in that, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so for example, at the moment, they use the terms like with government bonds and securities.
Yes.
and the banks are the ones buying these government bonds and securities.
Yes, right.
Which is basically transferring money from the banks through to the government. And the obligation in exchange is this debt, this public debt. So at the moment, you've got these countries borrowing money into existence instead of printing from their own treasury. Now, the result of that is that you need a taxpayer to be able to repay this debt. But because these private banks demand interest on top of repayment of the capital, the physical impossibility of repaying that debt, it just is impossible because the interest was never circulated in the economy for you and I to earn,
yes,
to pay back to the government, to be able to pay back to the banks. And so we get this situation where the public debt just spirals bigger and bigger and bigger. And what are we seeing at the moment? Exactly that. We've got these debt ceilings in the US where they keep having to ask to set the bar higher. And there's a couple of standout instances in history where the Treasury did print the money, and the presidents in charge of that found themselves dead.
Fascinating.
So you can draw some interesting parallels there. And there's even a document called, I think, the Chicago Plan, which was produced with the, I think, by the IMF, and in 1971 it was originally done, from memory. Don't quote me on that one. There's a document where they reviewed it, the Chicago Plan Revisited, in 2012, and there's some fascinating quotes that come out of that. And again, they're talking about Treasury-printed money backed by the people. But then it's not private bank owned, it's owned by the people. So what I believe that we've got in place at the moment is a situation where the original governments of countries found themselves going bankrupt owing to the inability to repay these private banks. And what we've got now is those private banks have essentially foreclosed on those sovereign governments, if you like, and instigated liquidators or administrators to manage a bankrupt country. And that's where our corporate governments have come from.
And so you're actually talking about Australia when you say that.
Specifically Australia, and yeah. I believe the same scenario exists fairly well on a widespread pattern across the world.
And yet Australia appears to be an affluent country. It's, you know, it's quite high up in the sort of, you know, standard of living around the world. It appears to be a country which has a lot of, you know, gross domestic product. It has a lot of trade. I mean, it has the indicators of being a country that's doing pretty well on, if you look at it on one level. Although, yeah, what I've noticed about Australia is how incredibly eroded a lot of our infrastructure is in the country. But having said that, we do have roads. We have roads and bridges, and you know, they all function. Just not, I think, to the level that we would be capable of, considering the amount of tax that we pay.
Oh, yes.
But let's just get back to this point about the real control of the monetary system. Because if what you're saying is true, that in fact that the banks have actually been, well, are now running the system, but the system was more or less set up for the banks to do this because it was inevitable that this was going to happen.
Yep. Are you familiar with the Commonwealth Railways project and the Snowy Mountains water scheme here in Australia back in the 1920s or?
Yeah, well, I'm very familiar with the Snowy Mountains scheme. Yeah, tell us a bit about that.
And were they not funded by the Commonwealth Bank at the time? I'm pretty sure they were.
Yeah.
And another interesting little nugget is you look at the year the Income Tax Assessment Act came in, 1931. Now, however did the country survive before income tax?
That's interesting, isn't it?
And I think the States, it's 1931. from memory. 1933 was when they incorporated the IRS in Puerto Rico.
It's fascinating, isn't it, to try and think like how did things work
before then?
Yeah, how did things work before then? And you know, what is okay? This question of the banks basically lending to the government to provide the money. When did that first come into practice, in your understanding?
I'm not entirely sure. It's a very difficult subject to track down. There's a brilliant article that's worth searching for. It's called Bankers Bradbury's Carnage and Slaughter on the Western Front.
Okay.
And it was written, I think, last year in November, and it cites about three specific examples in history where treasuries printed the money backed by the people instead of this private bank issued currency. So I'd highly recommend having a look at that. And if you reach the conclusion, like I did, that the treasuries are capable of issuing their own currency debt-free, as in it's not being borrowed from someone else, and it's backed by the energy and effort of the people, then all of this aspect of private bank-created money and borrowing it into existence through bonds or securities is an absolute con. So further with the banking, we've found a little situation here in Australia. Are you familiar with financing statements?
Not in great depth, no.
I'll give you a quick example of the use of a financing statement. It's used to record a security interest in some other collateral, usually in the course of a transaction like a loan. Now, I'll use loan for the moment in the context that we're mostly familiar with, because that's another little can of worms.
Sure.
But say you go to get finance on a car, and you have seemingly a obligation to the bank. They regard you as the debtor. The bank would be the secured party, and they have a secured interest in collateral being the car that you went and purchased. And they record this on a financing statement, and quite often it's recorded within the UCC or Uniform Commercial Code. And in Australia, we've got that has been purportedly legislated in under the Personal Property Securities Act of 2009. Now, not that I like citing these acts, particularly ones that derive from the Parliament of Australia, being a parliament that doesn't even exist in the Constitution.
Scott, we're just going to break. We'll continue with that when we come back. I'm speaking to Scott Bartle about the subversion of our monetary system by a very, very deep and dark, one would have to call it a conspiracy, I guess, going back who knows how long. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, we're talking about the financial system. We're trying to get into some very, very deep questions here. Scott Bartle, a man who's experienced some very savage aspects of the, the unjust and manipulated mechanisms of trade and finance. Scott has, dedicated himself to trying to understand this and trying to communicate what is really going on to people on a basic level that we can all understand. Now, Scott, you know, many of us are familiar with the concept of of money as debt. There's been some great movies on that theme, and we can see that that the creation of money as debt is certainly an anomaly in itself that many people were not aware of. You're actually you're kind of refining this, it seems to me, a little bit in saying that, well, the problem here is not so much that you're creating a debt. The problem is you're creating a debt to a private organization, whereas what you say should be the case should be that it should be a debt that the people hold to the future as in return for the money that is produced by the government. I don't know if I'm actually phrasing that right, but I'm actually getting a different sort of perspective from you on it to what I've heard before.
I think perhaps what might be a interesting exercise is to carry on the line from before the break with regard to those financing statements.
Sure.
I do actually hold that money is a representation of value and shouldn't be a representation of a debt to someone. But anyway, we'll cover that one.
Okay, we'll get back to that. Yeah, sure.
So if we use that example where you go along to a financial institution, borrow some money, you become a debtor, the bank acts is recorded as a secured party, they have a security interest registered in collateral, say, for example, the car that you use that money to buy, until your obligation is actually paid back to the bank. And they record that in a financing statement on the Uniform Commercial Code, or UCC.
Sure.
Now, here in Australia, we tracked down a number of these financing statements that showed the debtor as being the big four banks of Australia, ANZ, Commonwealth, National and Westpac.
Okay.
So they were a debtor to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. Now, the size of the collateral that the Federal Reserve Bank of New York had registered of each of those banks was basically everything.
Wow.
It was using terminology like all collateral, bonds, property, now owned or hereafter in the future. It was just absolutely everything. So the question came up.
Wow.
Was, when you had the secured, you had the obligation from borrowing money for the car, the size of the obligation was relative to the security interest in the collateral or the car. And if you wanted to borrow more, then they'd want to register more collateral. So here we've got the Federal Reserve Bank of New York with a massive registration in essentially all the collateral of these Australian banks. What's the size of the obligation that each bank has back to the Federal Reserve, and is that obligation reported to the shareholders? And
right.
Certainly not. So what we're seeing is two things. One, UCC working very thoroughly here in Australia. Two, these banks having an obligation through to the Federal Reserve, seemingly unreported, and also that one of the things that they recorded on this financing statement was something called chattel paper. Are you familiar with that term?
Chattel paper. Can you explain that one for us? Thanks.
Yeah, it's another one that's defined within the UCC code, but it really is a bit of a shocker.
Sure.
Let me just see if I can pull up the... Chattel paper is a record or records that evidence both a monetary obligation and a security interest in specific goods. It goes on, but it defines goods separately as something that includes the unborn young of animals. Now,
right.
I don't know about you, but I don't know too many farmers that go around counting their cattle and going, oop, that one's pregnant. Better run back and tell the accountant.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow, okay.
Why would you have the unborn young of animals recorded as goods? Now, there's another financing statement that comes up that's rather interesting, and that one is actually backing up a transaction seemingly that's got the figure of around about $4.3 quadrillion. It's an absolutely monstrous sum of money, and the capital that's recorded in that is actually uses the term. Let's see if I can quickly find it. Here we go. The collateral. So imagine that your Toyota Corolla or Toyota whatever four-cylinder car is recorded normally as collateral. This financing statement here says, as collateral, all real men with hands and legs and all real land in the United States of America, $14 quadrillion.
This is actually in the document. It actually says those exact words, doesn't it?
Yep, and that's a financing statement where the debtor is the U.S. Department of Defense, and we've got a secured party as North American Water and Power Alliance. Also using the federal, related with the Federal Reserve System.
It actually says all your men with hands and legs.
All real men.
Real men. Interesting.
It's a bit hard to say, nah, that's not the people.
Interesting, real men. What about women? It almost sounds medieval, actually. There is something. I know a lot of legal documentation has a kind of a medieval quality to it, because a lot of it sort of evolves out of hundreds and hundreds of years of very obscure terminology. Now, one thing that some people would say is that, you know, that's just obscure legal terminology. You don't have to worry about it, you know, because in the real world things happen like this. I mean, what have you got to say to that? Because I know a lot of people would probably dismiss it and say, you know, you just can't worry too much about the frightening things you might infer from reading the fine print of some obscure legal document.
Well, if we go up and have a look at what Bill Clinton actually defined as capital in Executive Order 13037 from March 1997, he actually says in the executive order, the appropriate definition of capital for federal budgeting, including use of capital for the federal government itself or the economy at large, ownership by the federal government or some other entity, blah, blah, blah. Where are we? Sorry, I'm just looking for the bit that says defense or non-government capital, physical capital, and intangible or human capital. Okay, so we've lost the term men with real arm and legs, and now we have human capital. If you can find a lawyer who can get himself out of that box.
So, yes, the asset, the human being is considered as
chattel. And also seemingly they go and count the unborn young of us cattle. So there's some pretty horrendous things going on. Seemingly the backing for some of the funding that's being shifted around is coming from the people, whereas we used to think of collateral as like real estate or things like that, cars and gold and silver. And well, it looks like you've got a dollar sign tattooed on your forehead now as part of the capital that the president's using.
It sounds like feudalism to me, doesn't it? I mean, it sounds like basically the indentured people have once again become the indentured serfs, and to justify their mere existence, they have to engage in some form of, I guess, labor or slavery to serve the feudal lords.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, that's certainly not what I thought. That's not what I signed up for. I'll tell you what, we're going to break. I'm with Scott Bartle here today, ladies and gentlemen. Very interesting discussion. Do stay with us. We'll be on this subject for the next half hour. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And it's my unfortunate duty to inform you, ladies and gentlemen, that you are owned. You are certainly allowed to wander around and experience your version of freedom, just like the cattle in a paddock can certainly walk around and feel like they're free. But there are certain, you know, things that do inhibit them, and there are some fences there, and sometimes those fences are electrified. And of course, there's a slaughterhouse down the hill. Look, Scott, you know, what you're saying certainly resonates with me, and I'm sure many listeners on one level, is that we certainly feel that we've been treated like cattle. And we feel that we've increasingly been treated like cattle. And we've noticed a corporatization of the government. We've noticed a merger of corporations and big government, which is just, it's just increasing, you know, year by year.
Yeah.
You're trying to, I guess, explain it. You're trying to show us how it was engineered at a structural level using, you know, instruments, using laws and financial documents.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've just got one slant on it. From what I've found, it really goes a whole lot deeper. I mean, there are folk who can talk to the origins of, for example, the birth certificate and the bonds that are created at birth, and how the title deeds or title documents is created from there. It really is an absolute rabbit hole. The avenue that I've chosen to work on here in Australia has been more of an awareness function to, I mean, we've been able to point out glaring inconsistencies with, for example, the name of government here in Australia.
Yes, you've got on your website, I'm just looking at your website now, truthnow.net, and you've got here Parliament of the Commonwealth versus Parliament of Australia. Can you just quickly, run through some of that material?
Yeah, that one's actually a really good one. The Constitution of 1900 actually defines very clearly what the name of Parliament is. And it says it's defined as the Parliament or the Parliament of Australia. And yet what we have currently in Canberra and in various publications is this thing called the Parliament of Australia. And to me, if that's not the Parliament that's defined within the Constitution, well, it's not the Parliament that's defined in the Constitution. So are you likely to get any constitutional acts passed out of a parliament that's not in the Constitution? So that's a simple one that you can actually share with folk and go, could you show me what page of the Constitution I'll find the Parliament of Australia on? Oh, it's not there. Oh, really? And that's just enough to trigger their curiosity to go, oh, maybe I better look a little bit more at this. Because we can go and talk about all of this aspect with the banks and how we're treated as a chattel, and it'll go over the heads of a lot of folk.
Yeah.
And so I've tried to focus on simple little tools that we can share with people that we run into at the cash register, standing in a line somewhere, at a coffee shop. I mean, I was down at the bottle shop the other day with my father. And the guys behind the counter says, oh, how are you going? I said, oh, great. Yeah, just avoiding the criminals up the road.
Right.
It happened to be election day. So I said, oh, look, these guys up the road are trying to get me to vote for the Australian government. And I can't find it in the Constitution of 1900. It says the government of the Commonwealth is the name to vote for. And he's like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And so there's another little opportunity to drop that into conversation. And just little simple things like that I thought were quite beneficial for most of the people who are completely ignorant of this, because they haven't had the information shared with them or taught to them at school or any of the above.
Sure. I mean, well, that's pretty mind-blowing. Can I just ask, what then is the Australian government in your understanding?
Well, again, it's just like that Parliament of Australia. If it's not in the Constitution, well, it's not in there. But basically, that's the organisation appears to be the corporate entity that a lot of the current so-called departments all hang themselves up.
Right.
You've got the Australian government, Australian Taxation Office. You've got my favourite, Australian Customs and Border Protection Service. And again, on the top of their logo, it's all got Australian government.
I see.
So, I mean, very simple ones. There was four of us who wrote to the Prime Minister at the time, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, the Attorney General and the Treasurer, and said, hey, guys, could you show us some evidence that the government of the Commonwealth is the same as the Australian government? Because surely if they're interchangeable, then you'd have a piece of paper that would allow you to refer to one as the other.
Indeed.
And given that it's kind of referred to in the Constitution, well, it's kind of an important thing. And we're not talking about the context of two backpackers having a beer in France.
Yeah.
About, oh, my government in Australia or my government in Sweden. Yeah, sure, that'd be the conversation could be described as the Swedish backpacker talking about the Swedish government and the Aussie talking about the Australian government.
We're talking about an official terminology, the words having specific meanings that are legal.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And you see how important that is when you go into a bank with a check and try cash a check that's not in your name.
Yeah, it doesn't work out too well, does it?
They laugh you out of the bank.
Now, Scott, I've heard tell that the Australian government is actually listed on the New York Stock Exchange.
Not to my knowledge. There is actually, and it may be confused with the Commonwealth of Australia.
Ah, okay, sorry. Yeah, I've heard something about the New York Stock Exchange.
And even using the Commonwealth of Australia is a little bit of a misnomer because that suggests that there's only one of them. And a lot of folks say, oh, the Commonwealth of Australia is a company. And I go, well, hang on. What that's done is just that statement alone has said there is only one Commonwealth of Australia. From my research, there's at least two. There's one that comprises of the people here in Australia, in the landmass of Australia. And then there's also a number of other corporations registered in Washington, D.C. and other locations. So I prefer to use the term, there is a company registered in Washington, D.C. called the Commonwealth of Australia, rather than say the Commonwealth of Australia is a company.
Okay, yeah, I understand that.
Multiple.
Can I just ask, I mean, do you think that there is somewhere a cabal of super elites who are actually consciously in on this and are just having a good laugh about what they've done? Because, I mean, I know that the vast majority of people, including many people who would be wealthy, you know, you could say privileged, would not have a clue of what you're talking about. But from what you're describing, it looks like it's very orchestrated, very planned. There would need to be some sort of cabal of insiders who actually consciously know what they're doing here.
I believe so, yeah. I believe that there are a lot of folk who are unwittingly perpetuating the saga.
Yeah.
And I believe there are also a few that have very tight control on the strings that are being pulled. If I can just finish off on that, some of those companies registered in Washington.
Okay, sure.
We managed to track down some Dun & Bradstreet company numbers for some of these Commonwealths of Australia. And there's about three or so of them that are registered at the same address, which is the embassy in Washington. Now, one of them is the Commonwealth of Australia. The next one's Australia, comma, the Commonwealth of, Commonwealth of, and then the last one is my absolute favourite. This is Australia, comma, Commonwealth of, in brackets, Inc. Now, that they spelt Commonwealth wrong. They spelt it with an M in the middle, Commonwealth.
Right.
And then there's an incorporated abbreviation at the end. So it's like, okay, a bit hard to explain away that as not being a company.
Can I ask, is it possible to know what the assets and wealth of these entities are?
Difficult.
I think we're just having a little problem with the Skype connection here. could be the music at my end. We're just going to break. I'm talking to Scott Bartle about some pretty extraordinary stuff. Do stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. With Truth News Radio, and I'm talking to my guest Scott Bartle today about some pretty strange stuff, and it's not something I've really got into in any great depth in the show before, but I've certainly touched on the concept of the cattle-like nature of modern existence, and I'd like to probe into these questions in more detail. Scott, I was just asking you there at the end of the last segment about these entities that you've discovered that are listed in the US. What sort of wealth do they have?
Well, I would say fairly astronomical. I mean, if it's probably contextual here to go back and have a look at some of the quotes in history. I mean, literally, we've been warned about this sort of situation via various presidents and high-level sort of public figures for hundreds of years at least.
Yeah.
And the one that stands out in this context is that one from, what's his name, Meyer Amschel Rothschild. That
okay.
says, permit me to issue and control the money of a nation, and I care not who makes the laws.
Indeed. Yeah.
So it puts them straight above the law, and if they're controlling and issuing the money supply, well, what is the extent of their reserves? Bottomless.
Yeah. And these people just see themselves as born to rule. They believe it is their right, their privilege. They believe they are essentially the gods that rule over us.
Hard to say. There's again conflicting opinions on the intent behind what they do and why they do it.
Right.
And I'm not going to go there and second guess why they're doing it. Bottom line for me is, It is going on. We're starting to see it. More and more folk are starting to recognise it. And the more that goes on, I think the less likely we're going to have such domination and control going on to the people.
Absolutely. And you said at the beginning of the show that the solution to this, the antidote to this, is for governments to print their own money. And I just want to return to that concept again, because at the moment we're kind of locked into this concept of debt. And you said before that you didn't agree with the concept of debt. Can we just return to that, and can you elaborate on what you mean by that?
Sure. Well, basically at the moment, and this is another one from another quote, I think from the House of Banking and Currency Committee, they're saying every circulating Federal Reserve note represents in actuality $1 debt to the Federal Reserve System. Now, there was a time when your money supply or your money used to represent the energy and effort that you had expended. It was a representation of value.
Yeah.
Now, that's a value of someone for something. It's not a debt to someone.
Yeah.
Now, okay, the tickets, if you like, or the receipts, or the notes, bank notes that were promises to pay, were regarded as a debt because that was the promise from the banker to pay you. But you held the receipt and the banker held the gold.
Mm.
You could go along to the bank and the banker would give you the gold.
But yeah.
It was backed by that real representation of value, which was the gold. Now, you take away the gold and silver and what are you left with? Promises.
Mm.
That's all we've got left. So we're running around now in a system of promises. Now, interestingly enough, there's a section in the Corporations Act here in Australia, which is an act the banks claim to be bound by, that defines the term providing finance. Now, within there's three sentences the third sentence can be broken down into about 20 separate elements of ways in which you can provide finance. So there's a total of 22 different ways of providing finance, and only one of them is lending money. You might think, well, how does that work?
Sure, yeah.
So that's where we'd go back to what our money is at the moment. Our money is basically a promise. What the banks have been doing is they've been depositing our promises in the form of when we go along to the bank for a mortgage, fill out an application form or our mortgage agreement, and they take that document as the promise, deposit it as cash at the central banks or the Federal Reserve System, and they've just exchanged your promise for cash because that's all it was. It was a promise. Even the Banking Act of 1959 here in Australia defines Australian currency or includes promissory notes. So what they're doing is they take out these promises of ours, deposit them as cash, and go, "Ooh, look, we've got all this money.
Yeah.
Here's your loan. Make sure you pay it back in the next 25 years plus interest. And if you don't, well, we'll repossess your house and everything else."
But of course, a lot of people think that's okay. I mean, I've had discussions about this type of thing with many people, and you know, most people in the mainstream, and including people who are quite well educated, just say, "Well, that's the way the system works. You know, it's the fractional reserve system. Get over it."
Well, I don't believe that's the fractional reserve system. I believe the fractional reserve is a myth to distract us from what's going on. If you've got the ability to deposit a promissory note as cash, why would you ever want to loan anything? You just don't need to. If you can take a promissory note from a customer, if you like, and deposit it as cash, there is no need at all to lend money. Now, here's the test. If a loan actually took place, I would argue that the person who loaned you something, let's call it the bank, must have owned that money before they lent it to you.
I see what you mean. Yeah, okay. It shouldn't be a loan. It should be an exchange. You're giving the note, they give you the money. It's like they're of equal value, sort of thing.
Now, if that's an exchange, which like, for example, the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago's publication Modern Money Mechanics says, is what they do when they make loans is to accept promissory notes in exchange for credits to the borrower's transaction accounts.
Okay.
It's your exchange, and it's happening at the time when a loan is taking place. So they're not doing it before you walked in the door. They're doing it with you, and they're taking your promissory note, and they're exchanging it for credits. But then you have to pay it back somehow.
Mm.
But wasn't it in an exchange? So if it was a loan, I believe that the bank must have had prior rights, title, and ownership to the money that it purported to lend you. Additionally, let's just say you wanted to go and join a private placement program and invest in something. First thing they ask you for is a history and origin of the funds that you're bringing along. They say, show me the origin of the money that you're investing. Give me a history of funds going back at least three generations to show that you're not laundering this money. Now, if the money that the bank purportedly loans you just came into existence from the deposit of your promissory note as cash, well, that'd be a little bit tricky to provide, wouldn't it?
Indeed.
Now, for all those people who want to pay the bank back, well, go for it. But I'd be saying, hang on a minute, you've just got this money out of thin air and you're going to sit there and do nothing for the next 25 years and want me to pay it back? Come on.
Yes, well, gee, that does my head in, I have to say.
If you had a gold and silver system, no way that could even exist, because there's no amount of tapping into a computer that you could do to create a certain amount of silver or gold. You would have to have it.
Yes, and of course it limits the bubbles that you can get. Having solid collateral like that would prevent the kind of bubbles that we've seen, wouldn't it?
Exactly. And the other thing is, so for example, we went to the situation where we said, okay, we'll bring money into existence based on a promise. Okay, you might argue all we've got to do is pay that money back so that we've matched our promise with the energy and effort and the hours that we spended for 40 hours a week for how many years to pay that into existence. Now, okay, that's great. We didn't even consider any interest in that because that just wasn't – interest can only be charged – well, let's just say the basis for charging interest is that the bank does not have access to their funds to invest in other projects, and therefore they make their money by charging interest.
Indeed. That's the way it's described, yes.
That money to start with. They didn't lose the ability to invest money that they didn't have in other projects. So how can they charge interest? So at the very least, all you'd have to repay is the principal or the original borrowed sum.
But of course, this scenario that we have of being forced to repay interest, which we see from the individual buying a house, it also applies to the government.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
So that's why I say that the governments are now subservient to the banks.
Because the government is paying interest.
Yeah, and if we treat the governments of today as an administrator for the bankrupt original governments, then it kind of explains why you've got these administrators bringing in acts and laws as fast as they possibly can to get as much money out of us to try and pay the banks. Because they're doing a really good job of cranking up the fees. They're raising taxes over here. Oh, need another tax over there. They're doing a great job.
Indeed, indeed. Now, just a very quick question. In terms of the way the government obtains money from the banks by printing bonds, how does that compare with the way the individual obtains money from the bank by borrowing money? Just a very, very quick response.
Similar. I would say the governments are backing their bonds with the chattel or us cattle, and ours from the bank is backed by our promise to work.
On that note, sorry, Scott, we are at the end of the hour. It's been awesome talking to you, and I will like to talk to you again. This is a really, really deep subject. Thanks so much for coming on today.
No worries.
That's Truth News Radio Australia for this week. We'll be back next week. See you then.